Hello, my name is Vicky at the Talking Information Center. Today is Thursday, February 19th, 2026, and I'll be reading from Sports Illustrated. We'll start today's reading with a headline from the Olympics. Jordan Stultz takes the silver in shocking men's 1500-meter speed skating event. This was written by Stephen Douglas about an hour ago. Stultz came up just short in his quest for a third gold medal at Milan Cortina Games. Jordan Stultz came up just short in the men's 1500 meters competition at the 2026 Winter Olympics and on Thursday settled for silver. Stultz, 21, came to the starting line needing an Olympic record to win gold, and finished less than a second behind gold medalist Ning Zhongyang from China. Apologies for the pronunciation. Shell Nuis of the Netherlands, who took gold in the two previous Winter Olympics and the 1500 meters, finished third. He was one of the four skaters to best the previous Olympic record in the 1500 meters at Milano Speed Skating Stadium. The excitement started when Joop Wienemars set an Olympic record in his pairing. Then Zhongyang and Nuis both beat it. Stultz, in the final heat of the competition, posted a time of 1 minute 42.75 seconds. This was Stultz's third medal at this year's Games, and he already captured gold in the 500 meters on Sunday and the 1,000 meters last week. He set Olympic records in both competitions. Stultz had finished 13th in the 500 meters in the 2022 Beijing Olympics and 14th in the 1,000 meter. With the silver, Stultz failed to join Eric Heiden as the only other American athlete to win three or more gold medals in any sport at a single Winter Olympics. Heiden won five speed skating events at the Lake Placid Olympics in 1980. Stultz has one event remaining at the Milan Cortina Games with the speed skating men's mass start scheduled for Saturday. The next article about the Olympics is titled Ski Mountaineering's Olympic Debut Was Absolutely Electric, written by Kyle Foster about 2 hours ago. One of the most fun aspects of watching the Olympics is stumbling onto a sport that is completely unknown and new. Every 4 years, it seems as though there's something completely different to learn about, and coming into the Milan Cortina Games, everyone had ski mountaineering pegged as the breakout star as soon as it made its debut. Fans and curious observers alike had to wait until day 13 to see it in all its glory, but it proved well worth the delay as competitors took to the hills and slopes on Thursday. NBC Sports helpfully cut this video showing all the different stages involved in what appears to be one of the more intense cardio experiences a person could ever encounter. There's running, an obstacle course, a long and arduous uphill climb, something wild called boot pack, and then the sweet, sweet reprieve of the descent. Sports Illustrated Michael Rosenberg took a deep dive into the sport in advance of the Milan Cortina Games with all the players, the rules, and nuances required to become an immediate ball knower. But it's also something that is extremely visceral in the sense where it's perfectly enjoyable even without any clue what they're doing out there. Heck, trying to figure it out in real time is half the fun. Oriel Cardona Cole made history by capturing the first ever Olympic gold medal in the madness, known as Schemo, and Margot Ravenel earned the honors in the women's event. Pure scenes. One last article on the Olympics is entitled Team USA versus Canada, Live Updates, Gold medal game tied 0-0 after first period. It all comes down to this in the women's hockey bracket in Milan, written by Mike Cadlick and Carl Rasmussen. Following wins over Sweden and Switzerland, respectively, Team USA and Team Canada are set to square off in the gold medal game in women's ice hockey on Thursday afternoon in Milan. The U.S. is looking to win its first gold since 2018, while Canada will try to make it back-to-back after capturing the medal at the 2022 Games in Beijing. Well, that hockey game is taking place as we speak, so for all the updates, you'll just have to watch it tonight. The first update from the hockey game, Team USA versus Canada, is scoreless after the first period. Despite three penalties and 14 total shots, the U.S. and Canada remained scoreless heading into the second period. Canada had looked much better than when these two teams met in preliminary rounds. The Canadians were out shooting the U.S. 8-6, but Team USA will start the second period on the power play. The next update, Team USA gets its first power play. With just 14 seconds left in the first period, Team USA's power play unit takes the ice after a hooking penalty against Canada's Ella Shelton. They'll start the second period with a minute and 46 seconds of power play time remaining. Two penalties, two kills is the update about 20 minutes ago. Despite being penalized twice in the first period, Abby Murphy, too many on ice, and Joy Dunn tripping, Team USA was able to kill off both of them thanks to goalie Arian Frankel and the defense in front of her. Frankel has saved all eight of Canada's shot attempts to start this one. It is still 0-0. The next update, Canada is back on the power play. Joy Dunn is whistled for tripping and heads to the box for a two-minute minor. Canada's power play unit is back on the ice looking to capitalize after coming away empty last time. We're scoreless through 10. Canada is 0-1 power play thus far. We're in for a good one. Canada gets the game's first power play. Canada gets an early advantage after Team USA is penalized for having too many players on the ice. The Canadians have converted 7 of 19 power plays at the Milan Cortina Olympics. Moving on to football, the Bears' move to Indiana now looks increasingly likely, written by Connor Orr. Amid a flurry of public statements and legislative activity, sources close to the situation say the franchise's move to a neighboring state is truly likely. It's time to get used to the Indiana Bears, even if the team would still go by its longtime Chicago moniker. According to a source close to the team's stadium relocation plan, the Bears' efforts in Indiana have gone from exploratory to something closer to inevitability, barring an unforeseen change of course by the state of Illinois. The Bears issued a public statement Thursday morning admitting as much, noting that the passage of Senate Bill 27 would mark the most meaningful step forward in our stadium planning efforts to date. We are committed to finishing the remaining site-specific necessary due diligence to support our vision to build a world-class stadium near Wolf Lake area in Hammond, Indiana. Indiana's Governor Mike Braun also posted the following on social media Thursday. Indiana is open for business, and our pro-growth environment continues to attract major opportunities like this partnership with the Chicago Bears. We've identified a promising site near Wolf Lake in Hammond and established a broad framework for negotiating a final deal. If approved, the proposed amendment to Senate Bill 27 puts forth the essential framework to complete this agreement, contingent upon site due diligence proceeding smoothly. Meanwhile, as CHGO first reported Thursday, the Illinois House Revenue and Finance Committee did not meet as scheduled. A bill containing funding for a new Bears Stadium, Illinois, was not expected to be entertained. The latest developments appear to move this far beyond posturing. The Bears have been in the city of Chicago for more than 100 years, but have been aggressively searching for options after the proposed building site in Arlington Heights stalled. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker told reporters as late as Wednesday that he felt progress had been made on stadium talks, though concerns over the percentage of the stadium that would be taxpayer-funded and the taxpayers' burden for covering nearly $500 million in Soldier Field renovations remained a sticking point. Having the Illinois funding bill, House Bill 2789, not called on while Indiana and the Bears make a public gesture of hand-holding certainly complicates matters. Included in the bill was a seemingly prophetic line: the state's economy is highly vulnerable to other states that have major financial incentive programs and competitive tax incentives. The expected path forward, which is subject to the typically strange byways and off-ramps associated with local politics, looks like this. On Monday, SB 27 will go to the Indiana House for a vote. On Tuesday, it would be voted on by the state Senate. Barring any stalling, it could appear on Governor Braun's desk as early as Wednesday for a signature. Thursday's process advanced the bill. Some Indiana legislators wore blue and orange ties while voting. A stadium in Indiana would make the Bears similar to the New York Jets and the New York Giants teams that carry the gravitas of a big city in their name but play in a completely different state, New Jersey. Still, the significance of a possible move would not be lost on fans of the historic franchise. While the proposed relocation site of Hammond, Indiana, is actually closer to Chicago than the Arlington Heights, Illinois location, crossing a state border could amount to crossing a line for some fans. Interestingly enough, Gary, Indiana was the site of a potential relocation for the Bears back in 1995, and it was discussed at length during a Monday Night Football matchup against the Packers. Should the bill make it to the Indiana governor's desk next week, it would not be a game over for Illinois. However, as a source familiar with the process put it, Indiana would be holding a significant lead with time running out on the clock. Our next article is regarding women's sports and Major League Baseball. This article was written by Madison Williams. Major League Baseball's broadcasting will look different in 2026. As the league's full media deal with ESPN ended after last season, one of the biggest changes will be the elimination of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN after 35 years, as the network will now showcase 30 weeknight games in the season instead of exclusively every Sunday night. ESPN has officially decided how it will replace Sunday night's baseball slot on the weekend. The network will dedicate the whole day to women's sports, cleverly calling it Women's Sports Sundays, per Variety. ESPN plans to showcase the WNBA, the NWSL, women's college basketball, softball, and any other primetime women's sports happening on Sundays. Sunday is a day of the week when we see a ton of our best women's sports programming, and we will have events outside of our primetime window, Susie Pierkowski, Vice President of Women's Sports Programming and ESPNW, told Variety. We saw an opportunity to have access in what I would call women's sports season, the summer months. This was an opportunity to be intentional and make sure our most premium women's sports properties were shown regularly. The network will announce the schedule, commentators, and information about Women's Sports Sunday in the coming weeks. Skipping over to golf. This article is titled "The Curious Case of Sahith Theegala's Exemption into the Genesis Invitational," written by Samir Pandya. I'm a fan of the golfer Sahith Theegala, and because I like him and the things he has come to represent for me, the Genesis Invitational's decision to award him a spot in the tournament through the Charlie Sifford Memorial Exemption left me scratching my head. But the more I thought about it, the more I wondered if the exemption allows us to think through who gets to be part of the broader American story, particularly during these fraught political times. According to the tournament website, the exemption has been given to a deserving golfer from a minority background. Since 2009, recognizing players whose journeys reflect the power of opportunity, perseverance, and progress in the game of golf. In 2017, the exemption was named after Sifford, the great black golfer whose journey in the game during the 1950s and 60s was not nearly as smooth nor as meteoric as the tournament host Tiger Woods. From a nuts and bolts perspective, I was surprised that the exemption was awarded to Thigala, given his past successes on the PGA Tour. Perhaps the tournament feels like he is the rightful representative of the Sifford legacy. Perhaps it was a golf decision, or maybe a box office one. Thigala is a popular player who grew up in Los Angeles, but he's not played well enough lately to get himself into the Genesis, one of the tour's signature events with a $20 million purse. The tournament can make its own decisions, and in turn, Thigala can make his. And I can't begrudge a guy for wanting to play Riviera Country Club. In some ways, Thigala is the next generation millennial Vijay Singh. Both walk tall and upright around a golf course. But where the Fiji-born Singh has always seemed to me to be on the outside looking in, never saying much, there is something distinctly American about Thigala's effect. He has a kind of lo-fi masculine swagger, born at the crossroads of a post-Woods era in golf, and growing up, I suspect, in an Indian-American immigrant household where sports swagger may have been a bit out of place. A couple of years ago, when I drove down to Riviera to see him play, I noticed that he has a cool hitch to his walk that makes you wonder if he even knows that he has the hitch. In a novel I published last year, I had Thigala's stride in mind as I was trying to describe the swagger of a 16-year-old Indian-American kid after he's run for a couple of touchdowns for his high school team. Thigala is the child of Indian immigrants. His parents and a crew of extended family and friends often cheer him on during his tournament rounds. I saw them at Riviera. It was all exceptionally sweet. He grew up playing public courses in and around L.A. and played his collegiate golf at Pepperdine. Since turning pro in 2020, he has won title and has earned over $20 million on the tour. He's had plenty of commercial opportunities off it. By any measure, he's been a great success already. The Sifford exemption is laudable for trying fix in one small way, a long-standing golf problem of not having enough minority players, particularly black players, in the professional game. Sifford began playing golf in the late 1940s and could not join the PGA Tour until the Caucasians Only Clause was removed in 1961. Wood's arrival in the mid-1990s was supposed to have revolutionized inclusion in the game, and to some extent it has. Colin Morikawa, who just won at Pebble Beach, and Akshay Bhatia, the 54-hole leader, are part of this generation that grew up watching Woods on TV. But the professional game is still not very diverse in terms of race or class. For the most part, the pathways into the professional game require a certain amount of privilege, time, money, and luck. The Sifford provides one such pathway. It doesn't really fix the bigger problem, but sometimes a symbol is important. A then little-known golfer named J.J. Spawn got the exemption in 2016. It was his only PGA Tour start that year. Maybe some small bit of confidence he earned there allowed him to drain a career-defining putt nearly a decade later at the U.S. Open at Oakmont. A newly arrived Vijay Singh, growing up humbly and having toiled on a lot of mini tours around the world, could have used the exemption had it existed in the early 1990s. The last five recipients, all black men, have used the exemption to make their first or second start on the tour. Clearly, the exemption is a golf lifeline or a Hail Mary. Thigala has made nearly 100 starts. In giving Thigala the exception, the tournament is signaling that his journey into professional golf is roughly in the same vicinity as Siffert's or any other of the past recipients. But is it? I don't know what Thigala experienced on his way up, but I suspect they could have found someone else stuck on a mini tour or in the post-college ranks for the exception. But they made their decision, and it's an interesting one for what it says about how Indian Americans like Thigala belong in our broader American conversation on diversity and struggle. I've been thinking through what it means to be Indian in America for some years. There are roughly 4 million Indian Americans in this country. On average, they have the highest family income among all Asian Americans, and yet there are plenty who struggle financially. They have tended to vote as Democrats, but there are now many Republican Indian Americans in our current political movement. They populate the Silicon Valley at every rung of the ladder, from programmer to CEO. They work in motels and liquor stores around the country. They drive the trucks that deliver the tomatoes and peaches to your grocery store. They are the victims of racial discrimination and perpetrators of it. They are not black, and they are not white. They are whatever brown is. Turn on a TV show in the past few decades, and if the casting calls for a smart, nerdy kid, or maybe a doctor, it's likely that they are Indian American. They are typecast as smart and successful and seldom athletic. All this to say that they are a hugely diverse group of people, some of whom have been successful, others who have not. And yet, and this is from too much personal experience, America will still let you know, on a private golf course, at a public post office, at an ice cream shop where you're buying your kids a scoop or two, that you don't fully belong. Ultimately, I don't know the genesis of the decision-making. It probably has nothing to do with any of this. And yet, making Thigala the Siffert exception places him and his story in the larger American story of struggle. So what does Thigala himself think of getting the exemption? When asked at his press conference ahead of the tournament, he talked about how enormous it was for him to play a part in growing and diversifying the game. But there was something else he said that really struck me. My buddy, actually a couple of my buddies have gotten this, but I remember vividly my buddy Aaron Beverly getting it in 2022 and how cool that was for him and even how cool it was for me. In that moment, Beverly's opportunity and joy had become Thigala's. The sentiment of connection between these two men, these two golfers, is another important layer of Sifford's legacy. Moving on to the NBA. Here's an article titled, The Five Biggest Storylines for the Rest of the NBA Season, written by Blake Silverman 7 hours ago. The NBA's trade deadline and All-Star break have come and gone. Some players got to bask in the sun of their preferred vacation spot, while others participated in a surprisingly exciting All-Star game. After a few days away, it's about time for the return of some real action, with plenty at stake over the final 30 or so games in each team's regular season schedules. For some, it's time to lock in and secure favorable postseason seeding. And for others, well, quite the opposite. A cluster of teams have found their way to the bottom of the NBA's standings. Hopes of taking a step forward this season have vanished, and games after the All-Star break are all about adding some ping-pong balls to their pot in the NBA draft lottery. But not in obvious ways, of course. Players who found new homes at the February 5 trade deadline had a few games to acclimate to their new situations, as teams who took swings to push for a title must adjust quickly to make it all work. Most notably, James Harden's arrival in Cleveland is off to a good start with 3 wins and as many tries as the 17-year veteran embarks on a new journey in the chase for his first title. The Wizards, Jazz, and Pacers brought in new stars, but they have more time to settle in without playoff aspirations this year. From contenders with added intrigue to the uncertain futures of some of the NBA's brightest stars to the always interesting race to the bottom, there's plenty to watch over the last chunk of the regular season. Here are the 5 biggest storylines across the league to monitor the rest of the way. 1. James Harden's honeymoon phase with the Cavs. Harden played 3 games with the Cavaliers prior to the All-Star break, which were 3 wins for the new-look Cleveland squad. The Cavs are 4th place in the Eastern Conference at 34-21 heading into the stretch. 2. Who wins the Great Tank Race of 2026? The bottom 8 NBA teams are within 8 wins of the coveted title of the league's losingest team this season. Each team is incentivized to find its way to the top of a loaded draft this year, other than the Pelicans, who owe their first-round pick to the Hawks. That leaves a large field of the Kings, Wizards, Pacers, Nets, Jazz, Mavs, and Grizzlies in the tank race. You could even add the 23-30 bucks, depending on Antetokounmpo's availability for the rest of the season. 3. Jason Tatum's potential return. Is this it for LeBron James? And the MVP race between Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Nikola Jokic, and Cade Cunningham. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to the Sports Illustrated at the Talking Information Center. My name is Vicki, and thanks for listening.